And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Everybody, good Friday to you all. Welcome to The Athletic Support. I am Marc-Antoine Godin with Arpin Basu. Arpin, another interesting weeks in Habs land. At least there were games, so that's a welcome change.
Yeah, that was. you know, even though the week without games was pretty busy, I would say we worked a lot, and so. But it was interesting on Monday evening going to Brossard and watching the guys on the ice and just the sheer happiness of these grown men who were just really glad to be back on the ice together and playing this game. And it was refreshing in a way because, you know, definitely the pre-practice kind of skate around was longer than usual. It was about, you know, guys started getting on the ice like 20 minutes before, 25 minutes before practice. And we're just, you know, goofing around with the puck, shooting on each other, goofing around with each other. They hadn't seen each other all week. It really kind of brought back the notion of, you know, these grown men playing a kid's game and how much they love it. Jonathan Drouin couldn't get his smile off his face throughout that whole skate around. So I think that week away provided a little bit of perspective, some midseason dose of perspective to these guys that they're lucky to be doing what they're doing, especially in light of what's going on in the world and the pandemic and everything. So that was cool to see. It was really interesting to watch that on a rare evening practice on Monday.
This is something that we've discussed off the air, just you and I in the past, but you know, hockey is a game. We always talk about, we use the word game. But for these guys, I think that there's a, I don't know if they have to get away from it being a game and embrace the fact that it's their business, it's their livelihood and their job. But there's the pleasure of it being a game and the love of the game is always, it's always better when it's always at hand and they can go back to that. And you know, when things are either more complicated or don't go their way, just the enjoyment of playing the game itself is, I think it's a key part. And for some guys, they'll get so serious and so caught up in the ins and outs of the NHL. It's not something necessarily that they're able to cultivate. And you could see, for example, a guy like Jesperi Kotkaniemi, from the smiling 8-year-old kid that he was to the more serious and you know, with a more business-like approach, as we often hear from, you know, in 2 years there's been a progression. But that spark, that innocence to a certain extent, I wish that they were able to nurture it, and because it keeps them fresh to a certain extent.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, we have talked about it, especially in Jesperi's case. I think you called him an 8-year-old, but he was actually 18, but he acted like an 8-year-old sometimes in the sense of his enthusiasm.
Did I say 8-year-old?
I think you did. but you know, it's kind of like, that's the mindset he has around the game. It's, you know, not to act like an insult or anything, or like say he was being immature about it, but his enthusiasm level, and a lot of these guys' level of enthusiasm is as high as it was, as when they were kids, you know? So it's like, it is something that I think is an important element that can be lost. You know, you do want to look at it like a business, and you do want to take it professionally. Like, being a professional is a big thing in hockey, but I think Monday we did get a bit of a reminder that there is an element of fun and an element of enthusiasm and an element of childlike, just wide-eyed appreciation for the game. That's also an important element here. And so,
absolutely. Yeah. So, without further ado, we've got a great show today. Our guest is Luke Strand, who's currently the head coach and director of hockey operations with the Sioux City Musketeers, but he was also the head coach. He was Cole Caulfield's head coach with Team Wisconsin a few years ago. So he's dropping by today to discuss Cole Caulfield. So stick with us for that. And regarding the week and the current affairs regarding the Canadians, many topics to discuss. I think that Jake Allen's contribution is something to be mentioned. There is also something. Jake Evans is in a bit of a crux right now at the crossfire of depth and salary cap issues. Something else that we would like to touch on is Josh Anderson, because amidst this current 3-game winning streak, the second one only this season for the Canadiens, everything seems to be going well for that team, but individually, there are little things that could be better, and certain players that you'd like to see recapture their effectiveness from early on, and that's certainly the case with Josh Anderson. But let's get started with goaltending, because Arpin, we've been waiting, and probably that Carey Price has been waiting to have a backup that would, you know, release the stress and make it such a big burden on his shoulders to play so many games. And Jake Allen's contribution to this team so far, he was finally rewarded with a win against the Ottawa Senators on Thursday, but his play has been so consistent and so stellar since the beginning of the season.
Yes, it has. And he's really come exactly as advertised. You know, I mean, he hasn't really had a bad game yet. He's among the better backups in the league. Doesn't complain, it's knows his role, not only accepts his role, but embraces it. And has really given the Canadiens a chance to win in every one of his starts. And, you know, the lack of run support has been pretty glaring on his part, but you know, He's posted a .922 save percentage this season. Was robbed of a shutout against Ottawa when, you know, Arturi Lehkonen took a poor penalty, and then the Senators scored on a ridiculous bounce that wound up on Connor Brown's stick right in front of the net, you know, in the final minutes of the game. But I would go to say, obviously Tyler Toffoli has exceeded expectations and has performed consistently at a level that I don't think even the Canadians expected him to in terms of production. But in terms of a guy delivering exactly what you hope for, like, I don't know if any of the new guys have delivered exactly what the Canadians expected more than Jake Allen.
Yeah. I agree. And there, I always have, you know, you mentioned Toffoli. I wonder to a certain extent if something, you know, and is something might be inflated in his numbers, and there'll be like a sort of a regression that they'll come at a later point down the stretch. But regarding Allen, I mean, he was an elite backup for the St. Louis Blues last season. Outplayed Jordan Binnington at times. And it's pretty much the same situation that's been happening this year in Montreal. And you got to wonder, in an era where a lot of teams are going with a 1A, 1B sort of tandem and want to really split the duties more evenly than it was the case 15, 20 years ago, that Jake Allen is a perfect guy for that. It's like he's really in that Yaroslav Halak mode, in that sense, you know, where he's the perfect guy for 25, 30 starts, and he could take more if need be. I mean, if the other guy goes down with an injury, he can take over. He'll be the starter, no problem. He's been there. He knows the drill. But there's also a certain talent in staying sharp when you play less often. And but he's been so effective that there's no reason to play him less often. So right now, I think that the Canadians have finally found the proper balance of the goalie tandem that they were looking for. They've got Carey Price back on track. He's been stellar since the beginning of March. And you've got Jake Allen, who's been consistent. So I think that everybody was hoping that these two guys could form one of the top goaltending duo in the NHL. And I think we've reached that point right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it was interesting hearing Jake Allen talk about what Sean Burke is kind of preaching and how it fits with his style really well, but I think it's going to really impact Carey Price's style and get him to change a little bit, become a bit more stand-up. Everything we heard about Sean Burke and his principles was kind of confirmed by Jake Allen talking about, you know, being a little deeper in your net, being on your feet a little bit more, and I think we've seen the benefits with Carey Price already of that. I did want to talk about one thing. You know, the Canadians are in the midst of a three-game winning streak here. And it's their first one since January when, you know, they were roasting everyone primarily the Vancouver Canucks, but we're looking like this team that was going to steamroll everyone. And then obviously things went off the rails quite significantly and coaches got fired and all sorts of things happened. But right now, you know, you look at the way they're playing. They've won three games in a row. Tyler Toffoli has not played in any of those three games. It just seems to be a more sustainable little stretch here than what we saw at the beginning of the season. I don't know what you think.
Oh, I agree with that completely because, you know, I was referring earlier to Toffoli's numbers that they might be due to regression. The whole beginning of the season for the Canadiens, you had to expect a regression, you know, shooting percentages. I mean, there was something completely unsustainable about it. Right now, I mean, the effectiveness 5-on-5 of that team, which been their bread and butter for at least the past 3 years, they've recaptured that. I think that the way the Philippe Dano line has come back into shape from the previous 2 years, the way they're dominating is really they're really the poster boys of that effectiveness 5-on-5. So I think that's something that's secure, that's part of their DNA, and this is sustainable. Their goaltending, I mean, there are adjustments that have been made, but nothing. You can't say that they're saving games, you know, and they're standing on their heads night after night. Again, this is sustainable. The defense, we see them less. And I think that this is the sort of blue line that when you see the defenseman less, it's generally a good sign. And that's what's happening. So, of course, you'll have guys jumping in the rush, your usual suspects, Petrie or Kulak. But I think that for the most part, they've been – They found their ground. And, you know, Romanov's game is not so busy all of a sudden. Kulak has been able to again, when he plays with Petrie, it seems as though his game reaches another level. Game quieting down too on his side. Joel Edmondson, I mean, everybody was criticizing his signing last fall, but I mean, he's been great. I think that he's been a pleasant surprise.
Better than advertised in his
case, for sure. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so I think that it's overall a good setup, and it's not as though the team was firing all cylinders, because you still got aspects that could be developed, could go better.
Well, so. I mean, you know, listen, we should talk about this. I know it's in our notebook that's out today. But Jake Evans has played, you know, probably two of his better games of the season. Dominique Ducharme announced on Friday that Eric Staal will be in the lineup on Monday. So this is coming to a head. I mean, it's Jake Evans' situation is going to quickly, you know, there's one more game, and then there's going to be something that's going to have to happen, because as we point out in the notebook, as well as Jake Evans has played, you know, with Eric Staal on the books, it's going to be difficult to have Jake Evans there. I guess until Yoel Armia comes back, it's not really an issue, because you could conceivably put Michael Frolik back on the taxi squad and keep Jake Evans on the roster as a COVID replacement for Armia. But when they come back to full strength, when Armia's back off the COVID list, there's going to be a cap situation with him. They're not going to be able to afford to have him in the lineup. It strikes me as something that'd be difficult for a young player trying to make his way in the NHL to deal with, that from a performance basis, he's showing that he deserves to stay in the lineup. He's had his two best games when he needed the most, you know, after the Canadiens make this acquisition, yeah, which is clearly targeted to replace him at the center position. And then Ducharme mentioning after the game Thursday that he could see Evans playing on a wing. You know, we point out in the notebook how that would give them a righty lefty faceoff combo on that fourth line. It would make a lot of sense. But there are cap considerations, and that's a layer of the game that's got to be tough for a young player to deal with, and tough for a coach to deal with too. If Ducharme wants that and gets told by the team's front office or their accounting people that, sorry, we can't do that right now, that's going to be difficult. But kudos to, you know, Jake Evans showing up when he really needed to show up and prove and stake his claim to a lineup spot, I think has been really commendable the past couple of games.
Yeah. And you say that it might be difficult for him. Not only that, but I mean, if he has to be put on the taxi squad or sent back to Laval for cap purposes, it must be a little bit disheartening for a kid to say, wait a minute, I got the lowest salary on the whole team and I'll be the cap casualty. Right. How's that working? You know? So, but that's the reality, because it right now the guys that are on emergency call-ups because of COVID, their salaries don't count against the cap. So right now, Frolik and Evans, their contracts count for $0 on the cap. The Canadians have not put any of those guys on IR. So Armia is still like on the active roster. Obviously, Staal, who's been in quarantine, active roster. Even Toffoli's not been
even
put
Sherratt
on IR. So
even
all of those – even exactly. So all those guys, so it's as though they're keeping really a real time snapshot of what their salary situation is. And in that but they're so close to the cap that they could not even fit $750,000 worth of Jake Evans as it currently stands. So the situation is, okay, so if the Canadians say, we want to keep Jake Evans in Montreal, even if it's to play the win and have that combo that I think would be very good for the Canadians, if they want to do that, they have to move money out some other way, whether it's by sending Paul Byron on the taxi squad or moving a contract. Something's got to happen, because as it currently stands, the fact that he's the only guy who's waiver exempt makes him the easiest target to be the odd man out.
Absolutely. That's really what it comes down to, is the fact that they don't need to put him through waivers. I mean, you know, Byron, it comes down to who Ducharme wants in the lineup. And if he says, okay, well, if Evans is going to move over to the wing and Byron's going to come out, then that solves the problem. I mean, and this obviously is after Armia's back. They could always put Byron down to the taxi squad, you know, until he plays his 10th game. Since he last cleared waivers, he won't need to clear waivers. He played his fifth game Thursday night in Ottawa. So there's a 5-game window there where, and presumably Armia should be back within that 5-game window. So there's a possibility that if Evans moves to the wing, that Byron winds up on the taxi squad, even though he also has been playing some of his best hockey of the season over the last couple of games. You know, not only from a production standpoint, but just from a noticeability standpoint, if you will, you know, showing some bite in his game, creating turnovers, creating some odd man rushes, being involved, having an impact. So it's much the same situation for Byron as it is for Evans if he were to come out, in the sense that this is probably the one time in the season that he wouldn't deserve it. But there are a lot of difficult decisions that are going to have to be made. But, you know, there's no doubt this team is better with Eric Staal. I don't care what he did in Buffalo. Eric Staal is an upgrade on all the guys that we're talking about, including Armia, including Lehkonen, including lots of people, including Evans. Eric Staal is a plus for this team. So it's going to be interesting to see on Monday how he's used, who he's used with, and what he looks like when playing in an environment that is, let's say, less traumatic than what he was living in Buffalo.
Actually, that 7-day quarantine might have served as a PTSD treatment.
Yes, absolutely. So that's exciting for this team. I think Marc Bergevin really deserves a lot of credit for making that happen when he did. You know, jumping the gun again, beating the market in terms of getting a player that was clearly going to be available, paying what it took. A big reason why all these cap gymnastics are going to be necessary is because of when Marc Bergevin made the trade. Even though Buffalo retained half of Eric Staal's salary, more of that half salary was still to be paid because of the moment that they made the trade. And I think a lot of other teams probably weren't in a position to get him until we got closer to the deadline. So Marc Bergevin made sure he got his guy by acting quickly. And I think he deserves some credit for that. We'll see how Staal does.
Just one quick note on Staal. I mean, I know there are some people who say, oh, he's washed up, he's finished. This guy is a Hall of Famer. And when you have that, when you've been an elite player in this league for so long, even when you've lost a step, you're the second best version of yourself is still better than a lot of players. And I take as an example Corey Perry. Corey Perry.
Exactly. That was what I was going to say.
Yeah. So Corey Perry, I mean, everybody thought, oh, he's too slow, he's too slow. Well, he found a way to be relevant and make sure that he's got a regular spot in this lineup night after night. So Eric Staal, history of success and effectiveness is not that far off, because last summer with the Minnesota Wild, he was still a guy that was, you know, playing at a somewhere around 50 or 55 point clip per 82 games. So it's really only in the microcosm of the Buffalo Sabres, which is an environment all into itself. It's not, you can lose your soul there. I think that it's a nice experience to say, and a very limited cost experiment to say, we're going to extract everything that's still good about Eric Staal, and a little bit the way the Canadians did with Ilya Kovalchuk last year. And, you know, they were able to get some great hockey from him. And I think that Staal has even more hockey left in him than Kovalchuk had. So I think it's really...
Well, he's one season removed from a 19-goal season. I mean, it's not like...
Exactly.
Kovalchuk was far removed from being an effective player in the NHL. And those were his most effective moments in the NHL, came with Montreal. Eric Staal... It was one season ago, and yes, he had a ridiculously high shooting percentage and what have you, but still, he scored 19 goals, and so that's not, you know, to have a guy like that on your fourth line, who has the potential to do that and has shown it very recently, is a definite plus.
Yeah, for sure. So the that team, I mean, you could tell right from the Edmonton game early this week that the level of internal competition has risen dramatically. The guys are feeling the heat, and it's been clear as day the last two games, whether it's for Evans, Byron, I would throw in Lehkonen in there. So the next 2 weeks are going to be very important and very interesting to follow, because trade deadline is 10 days away. if Marc Bergevin still wants to shed a contract and give himself some breathing room and give his roster some breathing room, he's going to act. But I think that he made great steps by beating the market and going after Staal to kick off that trade period.
Well, I mean, for sure, if he's looking to shed money by trading Arturi Lehkonen, Arturi Lehkonen is doing him a big favor right now. I mean, he's playing very well, and eyes are definitely on him. So if he's the guy, I don't know if he is, but there was a belief around the league that Marc Bergevin was trying to trade Arturi Lehkonen, and if that's the case, then Arturi Lehkonen is definitely helping Marc Bergevin in making that argument to whichever team he's talking to.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to bring up quickly before we move on is, you know, Nick Suzuki was under some heat, you know, prior to the break, for his lack of production and lack of impact in games. And he looked a little lethargic. It seemed like he looked a lot like he did at the end of last season when COVID hit for the first time, you know, kind of there.
Yeah.
Not a lot was said about Josh Anderson over that same period. You know, he missed those three games with an injury, but he really doesn't have the same giddy up that we saw in the first part of the season where, you know, almost every time he was on the ice, he was noticeable. He was creating lanes to the net. He was carrying the puck. He was forechecking hard, big hits, creating space. What do you make of it? Because I don't know. I find it difficult to judge. Listen, he's got, I think it's 2 goals in his last 17 games.
Yeah.
Or somewhere in there, somewhere around there. And, you know, it seems to me that Suzuki's difficulties kind of go hand in hand with Anderson's. Like, Anderson showed himself to be a bit of a catalyst on that line with Drouin and Suzuki in the sense that, you know, I think Drouin at one point said, when you watch Anderson go like that, it's hard not to follow, you know, and we haven't seen Anderson go like that in a little while. What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, there are two things. First, regarding his impact on that line per se, I think that the line is first and foremost the Drouin and Suzuki duo. I think that's the basis of the line, and Anderson acts as a complement. His style of play, it can be useful on any line, but he could be moved around and they could have another winger than Anderson to complement them. So I think that they have to look at themselves to get themselves going rather than to their complementary winger, I think, because it's a lot of coaches think in terms of duo. And I think that's, there's so much chemistry that's been developed between Suzuki and Drouin that's what they need to build on. So I tend not to, it's, I won't say that it's coincidental, but I won't merge it into one specific, one hard thing that you've got Suzuki's lack of production equals Anderson's lack of production. The other aspect of it is now he's played 30 games, Josh Anderson so far, 11 goals, 16 points. It's pretty much the type of production that we were accustomed to see from him when he was with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I totally agree with you when you said that energy that we saw from him early on, he doesn't have that spark as much, but there's that certain inconsistency is something that John Tortorella was going to him after while he was in Columbus. I remember that early on this season when, you know, during the whole Dubois and Laine debacle in Columbus, mm-hmm. Anderson was asked about Tortorella and he said, well, he's going to let you, if you do your job and he's happy with how you proceed, he won't bother you, but you'll sure hear it. And if he's not happy with your approach to the game or with your level of intensity. And I've heard it many times. Oh yeah. You know, so he said that with a giggle as though he recognized the fact that his coach thought that he didn't always put that extra effort that Tortorella expected. And maybe that's a little bit of what we're seeing now, you know? So it's the two sides of Josh Anderson. And it's the fact that on the one side, he's got the total package, But also, is can he bring it 82 games? No, because it's a demanding style. But can he bring it on a more consistent level? I think that this is something that he can still work on a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's right now it's a tale of two seasons for Josh Anderson. You know, I mean, almost all but two of his goals were scored prior to February 10th. February 11th, I should say. So it's, and you know, that's fine. Listen, he's hardly the only goal scorer to have that, to go through hot and cold streaks. We lived it for many years with Max Pacioretty, the same kind of deal. And he would always wind up, you know, somewhere around 30, 35 goals. And when he's hot, he's hot. And when he's not, he's not. And that's hardly unique to Josh Anderson. It's just that it's, you know, we're still learning about this player. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, considering how well the team is playing right now, to see how he comes out of this. You know, like at some point here, I think he's going to come to the realization of what's going on. He's going to look at his own numbers and be like, okay, well, something's missing. I need to bring it. And I think we've seen some sparks of it over the last couple of games. You know, there's one play in particular against Edmonton, where there was like this, the puck was near the Edmonton blue line and him and Suzuki and two Oilers defenders were all converging on the puck. And he went in there with such purpose that it turned into like this mini collision. And all of a sudden Suzuki came out the other end of it with the puck on a 2-on-1 with Drouin and created a great scoring chance. And that was the embodiment of a big forward creating space for his line mates. You know, that was literally what happened on that play. And I remember watching it and being like, we don't see that a whole lot with Anderson. And we saw it a lot at the beginning of the season. So hopefully I think, you know, he can pick up on that and he can start doing that a little bit more often. Cause I think Suzuki does benefit and Drouin as well benefits from that element.
You know? Yeah. Well, I think that going through patches where he's not going to produce, it's fine. I think that there's no issue there. But one thing is clear is that on any given shift, he's always 6'3". And he's always going to be a fast player, or at least in the foreseeable future. So that combo of speed and size, this is what he needs to bring on every shift. The production might not be there, but the energy and the tone that he can set by really going on the forecheck hard, putting pressure on the opposing defenseman or on the puck carrier, and really being that intimidating physical presence. This is something that he can bring more consistency, because even if he doesn't score, that brand of hockey will get other guys going too. So I think that's more the aspect that I want to see, because if he goes 8-10 games without scoring, well, big deal. It happens to everybody. So I think that the pure stats should not be the end all, should not be the main focus. It's just find a way to be effective and to contribute when you don't do it on the score sheet. We often hear that, but he's got a package that enables him to do it in such a different way than pretty much all of his teammates that, you know, this is what I'm looking for mainly.
So you brought up the trade deadline earlier, which is 10 days away.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to do our Canadian Heritage Minute, you know, which we do on occasion, where we look around the Canadian division, see what's going on. And trade deadline wise, obviously the Canadians have jumped the gun a little bit here with the Staal acquisition. We don't know if they're done or not, but they're going to need to be delicate with it financially. There are two teams in particular. Well, there are three teams the Canadians are competing with, because there's been a clear split in the Canadian division. There's a top four and there's a bottom four right now. Edmonton, Winnipeg, Toronto, and Montreal are all in the top four, and there's going to be some jockeying for position there. Edmonton, their cap situation is worse than the Canadiens' cap situation in the sense that they can't really accrue much cap space. They're sort of locked into LTIR and are probably somewhat limited in what they could do, more limited than Winnipeg and Toronto. We want to take a quick look at what Winnipeg and Toronto might do in the next 10 days and how that could impact the Canadiens moving up in the standings potentially, or even, you know, or staying where they are in fourth, or or what have you, how it would change the dynamic in the division. So it seems pretty clear to me that both those teams will do something in the next 10 days. What do you think is going to be the impact of those moves, and what do you think we can expect from either one of those teams?
Well, if I look at the Winnipeg Jets, I mean, they're just like the Edmonton Oilers. They're pretty pretty hard against the cap. They've got plenty of LTIR money, so it is also limited what they can do. But they can move things around a little bit. I mean, they've had Brian Little on their long term injured reserve, so they've got money to work with. But as Marc Bergevin said, you know, when we spoke to him in the last 2 weeks, the expression money in, money out is very popular this season in the NHL. And it's certainly the case with the Winnipeg Jets. They're so deep up front that I don't think that this is where they're going to go. They've got a great goaltender, and I think that they're somewhat happy with their backup. They could maybe look at an improvement or over Laurent Brossoit, but it's clearly on defense. I think that there's room for improvement for the Winnipeg Jets. And I don't know if they would be a willing trading partner again with the Columbus Blue Jackets after the Dubois-Lainey deal. But I think that David Savard would be a guy that would fit well on that team, just to bring some stability. They're so offensive minded, and they've got such good firepower up front. Then having a guy that can bring a lot of stability on the blue line, but still is able to make a good first pass and help the transition, is something that they could certainly benefit from. So I think that. I look around at the different defensemen that are available on the market. If the Columbus Blue Jackets are clearly out of contention, as it looks more and more like that's what's going to happen, David Savard, whose contract ends up at the end of the season, so he would be a rental player, could be a good fit for them.
Yeah, what I find interesting in both cases is that they're both the Jets and the Maple Leafs are severely impacted by the fact that the Nashville Predators are suddenly on fire. Because the Jets were widely believed to be heavily in the mix for the Matthias Ekholm situation there.
Yeah.
Not entirely clear if Ekholm's going to be moved because of the recent hot run by the Predators. And the Maple Leafs were widely believed to be in the running to get Mikael Granlund to shore up their top nine or even their top six, where Alex Galchenyuk is currently playing with John Tavares and William Nylander, and actually playing pretty well. Good for him. I'm really actually kind of glad to see that for him. But both those teams, if the Predators suddenly decide not to be sellers, which if they were being, if they were taking a good pick picture view of their team, they probably would be sellers. But if they decide not to be, both those teams are going to have to look elsewhere. And so I agree the Jets would probably shift their focus to maybe a David Savard, although they really need help on their left side more so than their right.
Yeah.
You know, they have Derek Forbort playing a top four role right now on the left side. That's really where an Ekholm would come in and solidify their top four with Pionk and DeMello on the right and Morrissey on the left. And in the Maple Leafs case, they could turn their attention to Kyle Palmieri, who would, I think, be a great fit, but there's also some question there whether he wants to stay in Jersey, whether he's going to sign an extension before the deadline. So I think it's interesting to me that the fate of the Predators has a serious implication on the Canadians, two of the Canadians' primary competitors in the Canadian division this season.
Yeah, but you're right to mention Alex Galchenyuk in Toronto, because if he shows signs that he can revive his career over there, maybe they'll say, you know what, we're going to keep our assets and not double down on a top six improvement where we might not need it after all. The Alexander Kerfoot's name has been floating around as a potential guy who could be traded, but we'll see. I mean, the other guy whose name has been around is Rickard Rakell, and he's got 1 year one year left on his deal, at what, $3.8 million, in that neighborhood. So if the Anaheim Ducks decide to trade him, that would be a great asset, great guy to add for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's very cost-effective winger for them. But that, you know, that would come at a hefty price. I don't even know if he's going to move out of Anaheim, or they'll say, you know what, we might be in a bit of a rebuild right now, or a retool, or whatever you want to call it. But Raquel is one of the guys that we want to keep. They might choose to do that, but if they're shopping him, then probably the Maple Leafs would be good to take a look at that guy, especially since he can play both wings, you know?
Right. And so, yeah. And, you know, Bergevin having done what he did, I wonder if what he does between now and the 12th gets impacted by what the Jets or Maple Leafs do, to what extent he's going to feel the need to react. You know, so it's going to be fascinating to see how Eric Staal plays next week as of Monday, and how that helps in the determination by Bergevin of whether he needs to help the Canadians more, if the Maple Leafs and Jets significantly improve themselves before the deadline. Let's leave it at that. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with Luke Strand, head coach and GM of the Sioux City Musketeers in the USHL, and a former coach of Cole Caulfield at the US U18 Youth Nationals, to tell us about his path to becoming a Canadiens prospect and their newest signing. So we'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So we're back at The Athletic Support, and our guest this week is Luke Strand, who was a former coach, well, actually current head coach and general manager of the Sioux. Do I say Sioux City or Sioux City?
Sioux City.
Just Sioux. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Oh yeah, like the Greyhounds. Then. Yeah. So Luke Strand is with us today, and he's former coach of Cole Caulfield. He had a experience when Cole Caulfield was a younger player, and he's come to on the podcast to describe his experience with Cole, his memories of a young player that was that started turning heads at a very, very young age. So Luke, thank you very much for being with us.
No, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
How far back does it go back to when we think of, you know, your relationship with Cole? What's the first time you saw him on the ice?
Probably, knowing his dad, those, you know, Brock and Cole, they could never get off the ice. It didn't matter if it was after a game, they'd go for a hot lap. So since a little guy, but, you know, probably by the time he starts to form a 15-year-old, then I had the chance to be on the ice with quite a bit at that little time frame, 15 to 17.
So what is your relationship with Paul being Cole's dad, obviously, for our listeners, but what is your relationship with him?
Yeah, Paul and I, we used to play against one another in college. But you know, you go back, we coached against each other in college. He was at UW Stevens Point. I was at St. Norbert College. Mm-hmm. I think you just go back to the Wisconsin route and maybe just a small, you know, it's a small hockey community that the people that are trying to influence players, as Paul did, and I was, I think you know, you're hand in hand in quite a few different venues.
And so, you know, for the sake of our listeners, it's you coached Cole when he was a U16 player, but he was playing on Team Wisconsin U18 at the Youth Nationals with his brother, if I'm not mistaken. Brock was on that team as well.
You know what? Brock was scheduled to be on that team, but Brock decided to go play junior hockey. So Cole was a good replacement, I think. How about that?
Ah, okay.
Not too shabby.
Yeah.
This This is an underlying theme in Cole's life, how Brock has sort of opened doors for him and got him spots on certain teams. So what was, you know, he's an underage player, he's an undersized player, you know, and this was your first chance to coach him, I guess, in a competitive setting. What were your first impressions of him as a competitor at that age?
Yeah, you know, right away you could see there was no fear. Like he just went after it. Didn't matter his size. His competitive nature stood out for sure. And then just, you know, flat out, he's been a goal scorer, which everyone I think can probably see that dimension still. But there was just way more to his game. He's a coach's kid, so he understood a big piece of like a framework of a team, how it fit in. Even back then he understood like what type of players would make him a better player, what players he could make a better player.
But the fact that, you know, nowadays Caulfield has his credentials, has been a first round pick. Nobody will be surprised if he has any success. But back then, what was the level of comfort or trust did you have, in the very beginning not trust, but I will say openness to having a guy who is underage. I mean, he's what, probably he was 2 years younger than the rest of the team. Also physically, I mean, he was at a disadvantage there. So how much openness did you need to say, okay, I'm going to look at the way things are going. I'm going to give this kid a fair chance.
Yeah. I think, guys, his ability already kind of spoke for itself. In be a lot of naysayers as far as older players or the parents of the older players, because you could physically already see with your own eyes his advancement on the rink and what he was doing. And then, you know, physical mature wise, like, yeah, he was smaller. But that, I think that competitive fear factor goes right into it. Like, he's fearless about what he wanted to do. He definitely was not a perimeter player for being a younger, smaller player. Like, he would play inside the dots. He was gifted already to be a scorer, but he was so determined. And then his personality, just as a young guy, he was already really good. I mean, you got to figure, being a younger brother of Brock, he'd already been around older kids quite a bit. There was a familiarity with that part, but his personality is so big. Like, he's a humble guy. Like, it didn't matter even at that age, where you'd think a little guy could maybe outstretch his boundaries as far as cockiness or arrogance or whatever it may be. And he didn't. He just went about his business. And in doing so, that personality kind of takes over. And then you see his ability and you can't deny the kid's smile. So there you go.
Yeah. The smile is sort of a defining thing for him. Now you, like, his sessions, that rink in Stevens Point has been sort of attached to playing a big role in his career. Obviously his dad runs the rink, left the coaching game in order to do that. And, you know, was really probably a turning point for both Brock and Cole in terms of becoming great players, because having that access to that ice sheet, they took full advantage of it. You've been on the ice with those two guys for some of those yep. sessions, and you know, to hear Cole talk about it, to hear Paul talk about it, Brock was a taskmaster in those sessions, yeah, because he himself was so driven to improve and I guess brought Cole along with him to a certain extent. What could you describe those on ice sessions with the two brothers and what they were like and how intense they were?
Yeah, I mean, first thing you'd have to go into, like, just flat out like sweat equity. They were out there to get better. There was never a moment of like, maybe, I think there's as much competitiveness and maybe a touch of animosity, who can do what, who couldn't do what. They can get after each other for sure. Like, if there's a poor pass made by one, not only does the eyes like pierce each other, but maybe their voices pierce each other as well about what they they get after each other, but really push each other in a good way. Like, I think that, you know, you see it today, but their brotherly love was huge. But Brock was, you know, no slouch of a player by any means. It's just Cole was 2 years younger in maturation, maybe. So there was some ability that Brock could do that Cole couldn't. But it didn't take long for Cole to figure out how to do everything. Not letting size or strength be a factor immediately. So they just pushed each other along. They went into it to attack it, and you got to probably give Paul a lot of credit in a lot of ways. One, you know, to your mention of him stepping out of the coaching game, because very good coach, but two, maybe just at times just being like, you know what, I need to step away from my boys, be a little bit hands off here, let somebody else handle them, and they'll come back to me and ask questions, and you can see that circle continues now.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, because there are dads who are not coaches, but who will think in their minds that they are.
Yeah, if they had a question, Paul could answer it. I don't think Paul wants to be their number one resource to answer their question. And that takes a lot of, as you know, as a father, like to step back and just a little bit enjoy the ride, but make sure you're just supporting your guys about what they have to do. And I think they've done a fantastic job. And obviously, you know, Kelly probably puts them all into shape and whoops their backsides that way too.
And I know that you've stayed you've continued to keep an eye on Cole as he progressed at the University of Wisconsin, but he developed a great ability for scoring goals. Everybody knows that amazing shot. But do you think, considering how difficult it is to develop that particular skill, is it the sort of skill that's transferable for all goal scorers who have it when it comes to being able to pick your spots, have the proper release, use the screens? Is it a skill that's always transferable, or there are specific aspects in Cole's game that make it more transferable to the NHL than some other guys that might, you know, score a lot of goals at lower levels?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a lot of folds maybe to that. I think Cole's hockey sense about put in place in the right time, right space, is really, really innate about what it is. If you really watch him shoot, I think his body position, protecting his hands and getting a release off is so vital. He's got a great eye though. You can, you know, I think I just read something where he had like 301 shot attempts on the year, and you know, 56 of them missed the net. And well, he's not trying to always pick a corner. I mean, you give him a corner, he's going to pick it. But if you, mm-hmm. if you don't, like, he's getting pucks through, and he's got a little, like, I think people maybe underdetermine his shot because of his size, but his release is so quick. It's a heavy little puck about what he shoots. And I think his timing, like, he'll probably wait for a screen. He waits to shoot through the triangle of a defender. He waits to shoot off the heels of a defender. He's not rushing himself. And, you know, some of those goals are ridiculous. Like his goal line goals that we've seen so many times now, where it's short side, ear yeah. off the goalie. That's becoming not an accident anymore. You know, that's becoming a regular theme for him. So his knack that way. But I do think his ability to get open and to find himself in a landing spot to be a shooter, you know, the better the player in the world as he's entering, like there's fewer and fewer poor passes even made to that spot. So watch out. I mean, there could be even a bonus to that part where he's getting tape to tape all the time.
Well, not only tape to tape, but just the recognition of, you know, I think watching Cole play there, if you really key in on him and just watch him in the offensive zone, there's multiple moments in a game where he'll pop into open space and just doesn't get the puck, you know, where his teammates need to recognize his route and where he's going to arrive at a certain point and get him the puck in that space. And you know, I think everyone talks about the increase in size and skill and speed at the NHL level, but arguably one of the biggest jumps is just the baseline hockey IQ in the NHL is so much higher than in lower levels. And so, you know, he strikes me as the type of guy who that's really going to benefit him, just because when he's playing on an equal, like, cerebral field as everyone else, that knack of his, you know, when you hear Tony Granato talk about his ability to arrive in a spot when the puck arrives, that you can't really teach that.
Big time.
Yeah. So having like-minded players around him should benefit him as well, I would think.
I would totally, completely agree with that thought. You know, we've had a player here in Sioux City, Jake Gensel, who is side by side, right, shotgun with Crosby, per se. Same deal. Like,
Right.
I think they're one you find a player you can play with, and they're going to excel. And I just feel like Cole, with the cerebralness of him, and is he going to need more strength? Yes. Is he going to get it? For sure. Like, he's so competitive, determined. But is he also going to make a player next to him better? He can do that with every player in the world right now. It's just out of the game he brings.
If I just continue for a second on the goal scoring aspect and the shot, you've been in and out of the USHL for what, 17 years now. What's been the starting point from when you started there to now, when you look at the way those kids have learned to shoot the puck, what's been the journey and the difference and the progress in their ability to develop a shooting skill? It seems that it's a world of difference now, at least at the NHL level now, from what it was only, 6 or 7 years ago. And I'm not just talking about composite sticks, but I'm also talking about the way that the guys hide their release, you know, those curls, the way that Austin Matthews can do it. But it seems as though there's a whole new generation of goal scorers that have learned shooting skills that are completely different to what the previous generation did. And Cole Caufield, to a certain extent, is part of that.
He is. I think it's a great point. These younger players now, I think, are so visually enhanced. They've had the ability and the fortune to watch a lot of these players that are successful, the Matthews, et cetera, that are going through, that are really excelling themselves as goal scorers. They've got a chance to watch a lot of those players and maybe copycat a little bit, but at the same time, experiment with and drive. I know in our league here, like the number of one time, like the ability to one time a puck, Royal Road, against goalies, you're really getting more dynamic shooters, because if you see it from the other lens, I think the goalies are better. And so you got to figure out ways to score, by adding deception, by adding your ability to get open away from the puck. You have to really figure that out, because otherwise, darn, they're bigger, they're better in the goal as much as anything. But I'll give the kids credit. I think they do their homework now. They watch the game for more of a purpose than just enjoyment. They want to see best players do best player things and see if they can't, recreate that on their own.
Hey, Luke, I think it's important to tell our listeners the context of that youth nationals tournament that where Cole played for you on that U18 team, in that it was just immediately before the USNTDP tryouts for him. I spoke to John Wroblewski recently about that. And I just want to play a clip from him about how those tryouts went. It should be noted, Cole Caufield did not score a single goal in 5 or 6 games during that tryout, was still not cut despite being undersized and despite not scoring when his number one attribute was supposed to be his goal scoring ability. So let's just listen to what John said about, basically why he made the team despite that, and then just want to get your reaction to that.
But he does all the little things besides score. I can't wait to see what he is at the pro level. But he's always been a transitional player. He's dependable defensively, and he just knows his space on the ice, and we'll see if that can translate to the pro game.
So John basically, they had a discussion within the coaching staff of, do we keep this kid, even though he didn't quite perform at the level that was expected? And then it was sort of the other things that you mentioned, the spatial awareness and what have you, and the instincts and the hockey sense and all that convinced them that they should take a chance on him. And then he became the most prolific scorer in the program's history. But from your point of view, how did you view that whole process? Because I'm sure that they were involved at the Nationals, and just the whole transition of Cole to that program. How did you see it from your point of view?
Yeah, that when he came up and played at that 18 national tournament, it's the midget 18 national. It's a big tournament for the U.S. Player. Not very many underagers. And a lot of the purpose of doing so was to prepare for NTDP camp and tryout camp, and to get around, out of his own comfort zone as far as age group and peers, but get around older, bigger, stronger, maybe maybe less effective players, but maybe just more competitive. They want to get after him a little bit more. So to try to ready him for that. And then it's an interesting clip of Robo there, because I do remember that camp. And I remember at the time it was Jeremiah Crow who was in charge, their director of scouting. And he just said, are you sure? Are you sure? Like his kid didn't score. And you could, but, and maybe in that snapshot, he didn't score, but you, to their credit, to stick with someone, even though undersized, et cetera, to come out on the wash and be the leading goal scorer ever in the highest program that we have to offer in the U.S. It speaks volumes for itself. But for those guys to stay on task per se of knowing maybe there's enough history to make sure he got on that team, but he sure took full advantage of it.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
It must be a learning curve for the player himself to be able, when you've been defined to be a goal scorer, when you go through a dry spell like that, to just to stick with it, you know, and identify that you've got other aspects of your game that can go for you and help you at least contribute to your team. I think that it was at that point, it must have been an unlikely or new situation for Cole, but this is something that in the pros he'll necessarily go through. I mean, he's not going to score 72 goals or things like that. So I think that being able to go to in his toolbox and figure out what are the other ways that he can help the team is something that's crucial to his development too.
It is. And I think, you know, you'd love to have your A game all the time. He's got a B game. We can all see he's one dimensional and scoring goals or whatever maybe that people might come off their tongue really quick, but I mean, that is a pretty important factor of being a player too, by the way. But it's the other part of his game. Like, he can check people off pucks. He understands he can angle with the best of anybody. He's great at stripping pucks away. I mean, you look at maybe even this year at the World Junior, like he did way more than score for the U.S. team. He was a determined player that played against and checked people off pucks. And I just think that level of his whole game is just continues to improve. And heck, if that's your backup game to be able to play against other teams, better players, but take advantage of their mistakes and you go score on them, that's a great trait to keep.
Yeah. And one thing Tony Granato has really emphasized is the number of major penalties he's drawn this year. I think it was 4. Some of them were headshots, some of them were, you know, I mean,
yeah.
It's when you listen to Tony Granato talk about Cole Caulfield and you listen to, his mom actually told me something, you know, back in 2019 when I visited Wisconsin, was that anytime that happens to Cole, he just smiles at his opponent and then he goes and scores a goal and smiles again. And that's what drives him nuts. And there's a player on the Canadiens right now, Brendan Gallagher, who that's his bread and butter, is just smiling at guys and driving them crazy. And the idea that Cole would have a mentor like that, you know, a guy who can teach him the ins and outs of surviving in the NHL at that size, not only surviving, but thriving in Gallagher's case. You know, I think that's an underplayed aspect. You know, Gallagher himself mentioned how Brian Gionta taught him the ins and outs of the small man's game, if you will, in the NHL. You know, I mean, that kind of mentorship for him is going to be invaluable. Like, as a coach, that's, you know, you got to be able to, I guess, appreciate that on top of the coaching he's going to receive, he's got this guy who is like tailor-made to help him transition to that league.
Yeah, you know, you look at Gallagher's, his path was through Hamilton and you know, learning and earning through the American Hockey League and coaching against him there. You could see that he was like, he was dug into and determined to make that next step happen. And it would be amazingly fortunate for him to have a quality like Gallagher as a player, but obviously the journey he's already gone through, that's a lesson in itself, and what a way to learn from. You know, you speak of Cole's smirk, and it brought me back to that team. We were playing to go to the national tournament. We were playing, I believe it was against maybe Omaha or whatever it was, but they kept taking penalties, and a lot of them were intended at Cole for sure. Cause you're like, your best player, small player, want to kill him. How do I get him off the puck type thing? And, you know, we just kept putting the power play back out there. And I, my goodness, you gang, like, there's nothing smiley. I think you've maybe seen some of the excerpts of him, but that giggle and that smile is real. And it is the pure enjoyment of what he knows he's put the work in. So now he gets to go enjoy what the result can be here on the other side.
You were mentioning that you coached against Gallagher in the American League, because our listeners must know that you are also an assistant coach for the Abbotsford Heat, obviously the affiliate of the Calgary Flames. And you played, you coached on that team two guys that are actually with the Montreal Canadiens, Paul Byron and Brett Kulak. So from the time that you coached them to who have they become now, what assessment do you give of their, you know, of their path of what the, and what memories do you have of them back then?
Yeah, it's, you know, Paulie was, I just, you know, obviously the smaller stature player, high energy, around the puck a lot. I don't know if he maybe executed or completed a lot of, like, all the time yet. But you could see that he was just never going to be there was a determined player. Like, that kid, once someone said no, he said yes. They, you know, they closed the door, he crawled in the window type kid. Like, he wasn't done. So, to see his success, even like to see the A on his sweater, and like, I think the reserve of what he's accomplished and how the road and, you know, kind of a Gallagher path in a lot of ways, like spend your time in the American League, but now he's done it with a different franchise. I don't know how you go wrong with a player that's got that fire. And then, you know, for Cooley's era, like, it was funny because he was coming out of Major Junior. He was kind of in between. I don't know if he really got his footing per se with Calgary at the time. I do think there was a transition. I do think there was a decor, like, you know, like Brody was just coming from Abbotsford. He was kind of getting the call up. Kulak wasn't getting the call. There was just maybe the stop sign of players in front of him at the time, not an ability. But then to see what he's done now, you kind of got to wonder, like, where that all came from, because at the time he just didn't get that opportunity, and the opportunities he's had now with you there in Montreal, he's definitely taken, you know, full force of.
Hey Luke, that was fantastic. We're going to finish up here and let you get ready for a game tonight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So good luck with that, but thank you so much for the visit and all the insight. It was really appreciated, and good luck the rest of the season.
Absolutely, guys. You guys take care. Thank you much.
Thanks a lot. Right. Thanks a lot.
Right. Well, Marc-Antoine, that was interesting. I love, you know, the insights from a coach are always obviously better than, but the, you know, the guy's at the grass at the lower levels who really see these kids at a younger age, I find it to be so telling on a player, even after they've come to adulthood and even after they've become pros. I find there's a lot of qualities that players have as adults that you can see at that early age. And I thought Luke's insights into sort of Cole's other attributes was really interesting there.
Yeah, because if you ask guys around about players who are professionals and their assessment or their view on those players is strictly on the professional level, it's somewhat limited, because in this case, I mean, it's not as if he has stopped seeing what Cole Caufield can do on the ice. So he's got an appreciation for the path. And I think that's where you get really the whole package, seeing, well, how did he look when he was 16 years old, and how does he look now? I think it's really interesting. And it's nice also you can feel also the Wisconsin aspect of it, where it's people are tight, you know. they cheer for one another.
Well, so, I mean, we should mention that John Wroblewski, who we heard from briefly in that interview, is also a Wisconsin guy. He's also from a small town in Wisconsin, and so, you know, that might have played a little role in Cole Caufield not getting cut at that camp without scoring a goal. But one thing I think the listener should know is that, you know, Luke talked about it, but I think the extent to which Brock Caufield was a driving force in Cole's life hockey-wise and really drove him in those on-ice sessions that they had together. You know, I mean, Paul Caufield told me that, you know, he would make sure that the night before they wouldn't Zamboni the ice, so it would remain snowy, and his boys would come first thing the next morning, and the arena there is sunlit, so he wouldn't have to turn the lights on. Like, he made sure that there were no costs associated to the arena for them to get that extra ice time. And Brock was like a taskmaster for Cole, and he would really, you know, he would learn drills on Instagram, and they would use those drills on the ice together. And it was, I remember his dad telling me that a lot of kids that age, they get on the ice and they want to do snow angels, but not his boys. And Paul didn't have a whole lot to do with it. Honestly, like he you know, the way Luke said, it was he stayed away. And it was really Brock that really drove the bus in a certain way. I mean, Cole had to be willing to do it, but he really drove that bus in terms of both of them getting a lot better day after day after day on that ice rink. The only ice rink in their town where you can play hockey is the one that their dad ran. So it was a bit of karma there, or kismet, I guess. There's a bit of kismet there as well.
But regarding Brock, you know, so he's been Cole's teammate also at Wisconsin for the last couple of years. And you could think that, you know, since he's the older brother and all that, that there might have been a hint of jealousy, seeing how well his younger brother is performing and what he's destined to become, whereas his own playing career might stop at the end of his college journey. Who knows? But it's not the case at all. And the level of support is so admirable. And I think, you've met him when you went to Madison, when you did that big Cole Caufield feature for The Athletic. And maybe you'll be able to give us a hint of his personality. But do you think that he's got something of a coach in him? You know, he might not be a player later on at professional level, but who knows, he could become a coach.
Yeah, and even as a player, you know, I mean, he had a great season. You know, like last year, I think was difficult for him. He was in and out of the lineup. You know, Wisconsin had this influx of really good players. You know, Dylan Holloway, Cole Caufield, Alex Turcotte. There's some high end players that showed up all of a sudden. Keandre Miller was still there. Obviously, he plays on defense, but still, it was tough for Brock to maintain his spot in the lineup. Took it with grace, and with, you know, I was there the first night Brock was scratched in his Wisconsin career, and that was his second season last year. I crossed paths with him at the game that night, and I just asked, you know, is this, you know, have you ever been scratched before? He's like, no. And he shook his head, and you could see how disappointed he was. But despite all that, it was you know, the sincerity and how happy he is for his little brother is really, I don't want to say unusual, but it's just genuine, you know, like there's nothing fake about it. And so it's, but yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of coaching attributes in him that you could be argued that he's been Cole's most important coach as he's gone up through his life, you know? And so, yeah, maybe there's a coaching future there. Maybe not. I don't know. I haven't talked to Brock I haven't talked to Brock since 2019. I haven't talked to him since that my trip to Madison. So I don't know where his head's at, but there's no doubt that his influence on Cole Caulfield has been immeasurable. It's been massive and good luck to Brock. I mean, who knows? I mean, based on the season he just had, if he puts together another big season next year, maybe he catches on as an undrafted free agent after his senior year. Who knows? And I hope that happens for him. You know, it's the improvement from year to year in the NCAA can be quite striking, you know, and he would hardly be the first player who emerges in his junior and senior year and suddenly gets on the NHL radar, or at least the North American pro radar, and maybe Europe's watching. You know, I don't know if necessarily his player journey might end, especially with the season he had, but he's definitely left his mark on the Canadiens organization by being a really, really influential figure in Cole Caulfield's life.
Yeah, you're right to correct me on that. All right, well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to the Athletic support again this week. We'll be back next week. But before we go, we must mention to you that we've got this promotion still going on. You can subscribe in Canada for $1.25 a month. Or in a dollar US if you live in the United States and are Montreal Canadiens fans. All you have to do is to go to theathletic.com/athletic support, theathletic.com/athletic support. So you can use that special promo link and benefit from our extensive coverage of the Montreal Canadiens. So that's a great offer to jump on.
So that's it for this week, everyone. Be sure to tune in next Friday when we come back with Le Sport Athletique en français. But until then, have a great weekend and a great week.